Matthew chapter 11 on page 10 in the New Testament. And it begins at the second verse. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me."
Now this is where I stand up with a little bit of trepidation, because what I had hoped to be sharing today, is now here, hooray. We weren't sure what the technology was going to do. Can we go back a couple of slides, please? Is that possible? For you, those of you who don't know me, I'm Lindy. I was a regular worshipper at this church, and nearly 3 years ago, I left to go and serve with Mercy Ships. There we are, there's a nice picture of me with the team, or part of the team. I started out, when I first went out, to work as the executive assistant and protocol officer. Yes, that's what my thought was as well. I felt as if somebody had taken me up onto deck 8, which was our highest deck, and thrown me off the side and expected me to swim. I was responsible, alongside the managing director, for all the business visitors, the high profile guests, including ambassadors, the Queen's cousin. Who else did I have to deal with? Heads of states, heads of the different health and everything else from the government. So it was quite a high-powered job. But I don't speak French. Mais non, moi, non. Je parle un petit français. I speak a little French, little schoolgirl French, which is not really appropriate for working at that level. You need somebody who is fluent, bilingual, reads and writes. Not me. At the end of my first year, I moved into the HR department and I took on what everybody tells me is the most difficult job on the ship. Finding a bed for everybody. During the year, we have about 1,200 people come through the ship, but more about that a little bit later on. Okay, so Mercy Ships was founded 40 years ago, and the aim is to follow the model of Jesus to bring hope and healing to the world's poor. But we do it in partnership with the local countries. We do not go in and say, this is what we're going to do. Africa is an evolving nation. It does not need us to go in and tell them what they need. There we are. So we go in at the invitation of the government. And this is one thing which is quite unique about Mercy Ships compared with other, NGOs rather than just charities, NGOs that go into countries. We go in at the highest level. We are in discussion with the countries. We've been to 593 ports in the last 40 years since Mercy Ships was founded. That's an awful lot. Africa Mercy that I was serving on is the fourth ship. They started off with the Anastasis, which is actually when I first heard about Mercy Ships 35 years ago and thought, oh, that would be a lovely place to serve, would have been the ship I would have served on, and they were part of YWAM in those days. But they have friendly split their ways because of the ethoses. And this field service, in May, we saw our 100,000th surgical operation in 4 years. May not sound a lot, but when you think that some of these operations take 6, 10, 15 hours to do, that is an awful lot of surgeries. And we have given services to the nations of more than £1.2 billion. Mercy Ships, yes, is small in compared with some of the charities like Save the Children and some of the other big ones, but we have a big impact. And we have an impact in the countries that we go to. All right. As I said, we go at the invitation of the government, and we have a 5-year plan. So I have just finished serving in Guinea. The Guinea flag should have come up there by the ship, which is phase three. So that's the third year of a 5-year plan. There we are. And currently we've got people preparing in Senegal for next field service. I was in Cameroon last year, and we've still got people working with people that we had trained in Cameroon. And what's doing? Before that I was in Benin. Okay, so as you can see, and then next, they're planning for our next. It worked. So we don't just, in any particular year, Mercy Ships is not just working in one country. The ship is the bit that everybody knows and everybody sees, everybody hears about, because that is the hospital. And that is what people like to hear about. But we are working before, we are working after. So in Liberia at the moment, we are currently in negotiation with the government about what they would like us to do. We have changed the surgeries and things that we've done over the years because of what the governments want us to do, what we can do to help them. Not to put ourselves up, but to help them so that when Mercy Ship leaves a country, the medical and surgical situation is stronger than when we arrived. So for each month, each country, we spend about 10 months there, from about August to about June. And then we will leave the country and we go to, the ship is currently in Gran Canaria for its annual maintenance check. And this year it's out of the water, so I've got away. Because to climb up, usually the deck is about where the bottom row of windows are that you can see there. That is where we access, that's deck 5. But the gangway is usually about deck 3, which is where the hospital is, that's where the dock is. You take it out of the water, there's a few more decks underneath there that sit underwater. It's about walking from here, ground level to probably half, at least the top of this roof, if not part the way up the spire, just to get onto the ship in dry dock, so I'm not doing it. I've come home. Okay, we have 5 operating theatres, and these are fairly modern ones with modern facilities. When we go into a country, these are a higher... Doctors coming from onshore to train, they have a learning curve to move up to what we have in the hospitals. But doctors coming from the Western world to serve also have a learning curve because they have to come down. And it sounds interesting, but You don't really think of doctors having a learning curve when they come from the Western world. But it's not just the surgeries we do, but the equipment we have is not going to be the same as what they are used to back at home. We're in a ship. We cannot store the amount of stuff that a hospital here would have, even in the surgical side. So we do not have the sutures, we do not have the dressings, we do not have the medicines that people may be used to working with at home. And to get that equipment and to get those medicines, you're talking 6 to 8 weeks. You can't just ring up and say, oh, I need this medicine now. Can you get it from a local supplier? A container from America or a container from the Netherlands takes 6 weeks to arrive. So there's a lot of planning goes into what we have and when we have it. We have 82 ward beds. We are just a surgical ship. We do not deal with medical problems. We don't have the space. We don't have the space in beds, we don't have the space to supply the staff. On the ship, I have 470 beds to play with. And that's between all the crew, and over a year, as we'll see later, can be about 1,200 people come through a ship. It's a lot of juggling. But we do have our own radiology department, laboratory, pharmacy. We are a fully functioning hospital ship. We need to supply everything because the services that are available in Africa and the parts of Africa that we serve in are poor. You cannot guarantee you've got electricity. You cannot guarantee you're going to have running water. You cannot guarantee your equipment is going to work because there may not be anybody there to look after the equipment. So Western countries very kindly donate equipment, but if they do not provide training, they do not provide supplies, and they do not supply working equipment, then what is the poor country going to do? It's not there to be a dumping ground from here. They are a country that are moving on in themselves. Beginning of a field service, with the country's help, we communicate what type of surgeries that we will do, and we have a screening day. And now we get used to that in this country because we've paid it through our national insurance. Out there, you can spend a year's salary, sell a field of rice, to go to see the doctor. And they may not be a doctor that can deal with your problem. So you then have to find another way to go and see another doctor 250, 500 miles away. It's not just popping from here to Halifax if you have a problem. And then when you get there, you pay for your food, you pay for your bed, you pay for your medicine, you pay for your treatment, you pay for everything. You come to the ship and it's free. So a lot of people come and we have a selection day at the beginning of the year. And we see thousands of people. And it can be extremely traumatic for our screening team to have to turn around and tell people we cannot treat. You have got something that we cannot deal with. We do maxillofacial. We do bones, we've got reconstructions. These are the things that we do, palliative care, dental. But people come with anything and everything, hoping that we can help them. People will travel for days when they know the ship is coming. Just on the chance that they might be able to be served, get treated. They might not. We saw 20,000 people in screening this year. We did 2,000 operations. We can't treat them all. Sometimes they come with stuff that we cannot deal with. But what's harder is when they come and we cannot treat them because they are too far gone. If they had been seeds 5, 10, 15 years before, there would have been no problem. But they can't get that surgery. They can't see that doctor. 70% of the world's population cannot access safe, affordable, and timely surgery. We complain at maybe having to wait 18 months for an appointment. How about 18 years for an appointment? Sambani in Madagascar is what you could possibly call our pin-up patient. You know, everybody has a pin-up, don't they? Usually the young dolly bird with... No, I think Sambay is ours. He came with a 7.5 kilogram tumour on his face. It was obstructing his airway. It was obstructing him being able to eat. So he hadn't got energy. It was here. His friends... He sold a rice field. His friends carried him for 2 days to get to where they could get transport to get to the ship. That tumour, if it had been 50p size in this country, would have been treated. Would have been done down the GP, let's get it done. We don't do beautiful surgery. We can't do beautiful surgery with some people. Back to the table, we can invite them back in to the human life. Sambani would have been living in a house on his own, away from community and away from people, because nobody would have wanted to associate with him. He would have been viewed to have had a devil, to have been cursed, and he would have been ostracized. The fact that he had friends to carry him says a lot for the family and the village. So he was with us in Madagascar, which was before I was there, but I would call him our pin-up, because that is what we do. We also do reconstruction. Here's little Junior. That is what he was like when he came to the ship. 4.5 kilograms. No, sorry, 4.5 pounds. 2 bags of sugar. He had a cleft lip and a cleft palate. He couldn't eat, he couldn't drink. And in fact, in Cameroon, we opened the hospital early for Junior when he arrived. He needed treatment that quickly. If he hadn't, he would have died. But our nutritionists on our baby feeding team worked with him, and he was able to have surgery so that when he left... That, believe it or not, is Junior. And that is the difference, being able to get on board at the beginning of the field service and have good nutrition made. We may forget, with the food and the variety of food that we have here, how important nutrition is to health. But we see people coming in, particularly from Cameroon and from up the north where they only had maize, that they had to do it. And I'm sorry, I forgot to see what time I started. Okay. One of my favourites on the orthopaedics. Oh no, I've gone to Sassaline was Madagascar. Burn contractures, very common. They're cooking on open fires. You just need a child to knock it. Her arm is bent. Yep. Opened up. She couldn't write before. She can now write. We have given the life and the hope and the healing that they can, children can go back to school. Yeah. Who fancies carrying 10 kilos around with them all the time? That's what that arm weighed, 10 kilograms. There we go. Just think, who wants to stand holding a 10 kilogram bag for any length of time? That's what she lived with. Yep. Esther. I met Esther at church. She's one of the girls that was at the church I worshipped in Benin. And she really did have, I looked at her, I wish I'd had my own photo, this is one of the ship ones. Her legs were out so far. And I still, the day she came back to church, after the surgery and after 10 weeks of physio, straight legs, she had grown about 5 inches just because her legs had been straightened. But she can now get out and go to church. Her mum, Dorcas, was now going to be able to do more for fun, earn money. Dorcas had been left with 4 children, including Esther. Her husband back. Dorcas was working around the family, but she couldn't leave Esther because Esther couldn't do much because of her legs. She couldn't go to school or anything. She's now at school and getting on, and the family have moved on. They'll always be special to me. Rehabilitation, we have our physios, we have our hand therapists, we have occupational therapists working with the children, working with the people post-plastic surgery. As I said, it is a full ship, full surgery. One of the saddest, if I've remembered rightly, should be obstetric fistula. These are ladies whose bladder and vagina have got joined through a fistula, usually post-childbirth. There are no midwives. Well, the nearest midwife is 50 miles away by dirt track road, which in the rainy season is a bog. You just can't get there. So women can be in labour for days, and that damages down below. If they are lucky, they may have a child. But often, these women have lost their child as well in the labour. So they've gone through all the pain and the problems, and they've now got no child to show for it, and they are constantly passing water. And they can't stop it. So they begin to smell, their clothes smell. And again, these are often then rejected by their husbands and family and have to live on the edge of the village with nobody to look after them. We do a simple operation. 90% of the time it works, but unfortunately sometimes it doesn't. And when they leave, we give them a new dress. And it is a way of showing that they have got new life. These women can go back to the village. They will be accepted back in the village. They have got new life. So the dress ceremonies, cataract surgeries. Yeah, okay, we'll go on to the cataracts. you're speeding me up, thank you very much. And not just adults, these are children with cataracts. These were 3 children in Cameroon. All 3 of them had cataracts in the same family. So you can imagine, after they had their surgery, the family, and could go out and participate again. Children not being able to see. We read this morning, the blind will see. The blind see, the lame walk. Well, maybe not the dead, but those that are dead to the villages, those that are ostracised, are restored to life, restored to the village. We do dental, and this year we actually made a brand new dental suite for the local hospital. University, because the professor in charge actually was somebody we had worked with on a previous visit to Guinea and was really behind us. We've renovated their dental school and we spent the year training dentists. That's part of the 41,499 dental procedures we took in the year. And as I said, 2,442 surgeries. All of this is free of charge, thanks to people like you. Because without people like you, people like me could not serve. But this is the best bit, is the medical capacity building. We don't just do surgeries, amazing as that is and the changes that that make. We go and improve the healthcare in the country. We restore, we build a lasting impact, we train local professionals. So we will come alongside the surgical teams in the country. And we provide tools and resources to help them improve what they can do, including building and improving facilities. When we go in Madagascar, this is an operating room before. And would anybody fancy having surgery in that operating room? That's what you can have now. But that's because what we've done, we went in and we renovated the hospital. The training goes with new resources, new equipment. We give them what they need. The biomed people that will look after the equipment, which they didn't have, they had before, but maybe not. They learn by rote. They don't learn to look or investigate. Now have new equipment and training. And it's not just any old training. We give them actually city and guilds. It's the city and guilds. I said at the beginning, we do screening and we train. When we did screening in Guinea, we expected something in about the region of thousands of cleft baby palates, 53 in Conakry. Because the last two field services that we were there, we worked alongside one of the surgeons, and he has trained other people. That's why we only had 300 cleft palates. We had to go up country to get cleft palates this year. They weren't on our doorstep. Ponseti, a way of dealing with club feet. That also, in Benin, when we left, Benin, where we went to go and do Ponseti training was actually taken look after when we left by a team that we trained in Togo a number of years ago. They came in to oversee the Ponseti clinic in Benin when we left. We are empowering local people to take on things that we take for granted. As I said, 1,300, 1,200 people through the ship each year. And we come from 30 to 40 different nations at a time. I have served with people from 69 different nations over the last 3 years. I want one more nation. Make it. But we do all pay our own fees and our own travel and our own insurance. This is why I say people like you are so important. We work together on land and sea to support those people in Africa. You are part of what I've been doing, me to go and serve. We've done this together. And not all the jobs are medical. Only about 50% of them are. So if you know any maritime people, captains, chief officers, deck officers, we are in desperate need of them. We also need some dental people and some teachers, because we have academy on the school, on the ship for children. So if you've got anybody like that, or if you want to come and help in the galley to feed us, or in housekeeping, you're all needed. We don't just need doctors, nurses, and hospital staff. Everybody's needed, so if you know anybody, pass the word, please. We need them. And these are just some of the, showing just some of the roles that we've got on the ship. Okay. So I just want to say thank you all. Without you, I couldn't have been there. And the last thing I have to do is, before I forget, otherwise I'll be in trouble, I have to remember to bring the greetings from the All Saints Cathedral in Conakry, from the Right Reverend Jacques Boston, Bishop of Guinea and Guinea-Bissau, and Father Abel Hyacinth Bangura and the congregation of the English-speaking community at the cathedral, where I have been worshipping and been made feel welcome over the last 6 months. So sorry if I've gone over, but thank you very much.